singing voice than I do, Wendy. I don't want to get in the way. We're at Port and Carry, right across from beautiful White Sox Park. It's opening day, the home opener for your first place Chicago White Sox. And what an honor it is to finally meet the legendary Ed Farmer. Ed, how are you?
Not well rested, but I'm ready for opening day, as everybody here is, of course.
You just got back from where? Toronto?
Yeah, we went through Canadian customs even though we were leaving. I don't understand that. I should have walked backwards out so they didn't. They thought I was coming in.
They thought you were bringing back some pharmaceuticals.
Yeah,
that's what they thought.
You smuggled in some maple syrup for us, huh? It's very nice.
They've got a dollar in there. They've got the leaves to prove it.
It's so good of you to do. You know what I learned about you the other day? Both you and I had the same baseball glove as we were growing up.
The A2000.
The Wilson A2000.
Absolutely. Yeah. I had a little loop on it so you could put your index finger out of it.
Yeah.
So you get hurt.
I thought you didn't want your finger outside because you could break it.
Wendy, you're questioning me. We've known each other a long time. I do know something.
Well, I know you do it, but most people in Little League, they tell you not to do that anymore.
Right.
No, no. Why do they do that?
It's because you're going to break your finger.
But it braces if you're catching, well, you know this, of course, a hard hit ball. I'm telling you.
That's because you had the same bit.
I do know that. I never used it, but I do know that.
You've seen the gloves from olden days when it was like a three-fingered glove, right?
I think I had one of those. Or
Did you? No. What was the thought process behind the three-fingered glove?
I think it was a cross between high line and baseball.
Is that what it was?
You'd go down to Miami and play with that glove and make some money.
Catch the pelota.
Yeah, the pelota in the guante.
How exciting is this year's White Sox and the next year's and the year after that? We've got momentum finally.
We have a team that this doesn't happen a lot, that the young guys and the veterans, which there's a few of, they all seem to love one another.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about like. I mean, they put in the dugout together and somebody's going to say, hey, let's go. We need to score some runs. And they're able to do that. We had a bump in the road in Toronto. Toronto played better than we did. Played the last three innings better than we did in the first game. And then the second game, they scored 7 in the 8th and beat us 14-5.
Yeah.
Yesterday, in a 3-0 pitch, I said, Abreu, I think he's got a great life here, and he hit it into the restaurant. Incoming, and somebody said, I'll have that. And that's how we won. Yeah.
And that's so important to work as a team. I mean, I'll say it. The Cubs did it the year they won. The Blackhawks have done it. It's the Sox haven't had that camaraderie in a few years. It's nice to see it's happening again.
It's an amalgam of different personalities, and not everybody's going to get along with everybody else. But these guys, they actually care about one another, and they're joined by one thing. We're going to hustle.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they're conjoined with another one. We're going to win.
Yeah.
We want to win at all costs. They don't quit. And they run the bases, and if you watch them on defense, everybody's moving to cover the base behind who's going to cover the one. And it's like poetry in motion.
Yeah. So do you think that this starts with Ricky Renteria?
Oh, there's a question.
It does, doesn't it?
It comes from the top with Kenny Williams and also with Rick on. But it translates all the way through. It transfuses down to the players through Renteria. And he was my third baseman the last year I played.
Yeah.
And he said that again in front of everybody in the clubhouse. And I said, the reason he's not a manager is because I shortened his life playing baseball with those Rockets.
What do you miss the most about not playing yourself? You get to see a lot of baseball, but what do you miss the most about suiting up and playing every day?
That's a great question. I miss the action of the game. I was never nervous. I made the baseball team in Cleveland when I was 18 years old. I beat Claude Osteen at what became Jack Murphy Stadium in San Diego and made the team. And Harrison was the first baseman. And he said some things important to me. I get to meet Sandy Koufax, one of my dear friends, showed me to find my curveball. I miss that engagement in the dugout with that. But also in the bullpen, you have the guys in the dugout, and you have guys in the bullpen. And I used to do different things during the game to take pressure off some of the other guys. I told the trainer, Herb Steiner, who has a happy birthday yesterday from the team, sung that to him on the plane. And I told him, if you don't wave to us, we're in Anaheim. If you don't wave to us, we're going to be standing. They just finished the enclosure of Angel Stadium. They made the football team. That's where the Rams play.
Yeah.
So they added like 25,000 seats in the outfield. There was nothing out there. It stopped at the foul poles, basically.
Yeah.
So we sat in those bleachers. They weren't open yet. And I said, in the third inning, if you don't get up on the warning track in front of the dugout, we're not sitting down. We're going to start waving at you. So everybody gets up in the third inning. We're waving at him. We're in left field. We've got a bullpen, and he's in the first base dugout. And LaRusso looks out there, and he sees all of us standing waving. And he goes, Herm, do you know what's going on out there? He goes, yeah. He goes, well, what's going on out there in that bullpen? And he goes, they're not going to sit down until I wave back. He goes, so you get your fanny up on the warning track and wave. He waved, and we all sat down. But those were some of the things that I missed. And also Kangaroo Court.
Yeah.
I was the judge in Kangaroo Court. And,
I don't know what that is. I'll be honest.
The manager doesn't have to discipline everybody. So the players take that on themselves. If you embarrass the club, that was a fine. I had a fine for fraternization with the other team. You were allowed 2 minutes. And then once the 2 minutes ended, they started ticking off the dollars. So if you went past 2 minutes, you paid for those first 2 minutes with $2. And guys, the mantra was, that's a fine. And you police yourselves. And it becomes a laughable thing that you have it once a month in the clubhouse, at home, and we have a docket of all the cases, and nobody ever won. So we sent some of the money to charity, and then they have a team party.
Oh, nice.
When you're saying goodbye at the end of the season on the road, the last road trip you would have that. And LaRusso came out to our UA play at Comiskey Park, and his foot got caught on the top step of the dugout. For one of the few times we were wearing that white uniform with the collar on it. Not very pretty anyway.
No.
Most comfortable uniform I've ever worn.
Not pretty.
And he fell flat out of space in the mud because it didn't drain well. He got up and his uniform was all orange. And he didn't go out telling you to play, so I fined him $1,000. Or not sticking up for his team.
Beautiful.
And it was something like this. I had a wig. Yeah. I had a black cassock. And I had, Herm got a gown that was about 3.5 feet long. And I would have the garbage can, of course, in one session. So he was the last case on the docket. And I said to Lamar Johnson, it was the bailiff. Big guy, nobody's getting away with it. They're going to pay the fine.
Yeah.
So I said, go get Mr. LaRusso. So Tony comes out and he goes, What's my fine? I said, it's $1,000. He goes, I'm not paying. I said, oh, you're going to pay. Somebody said, I want the judge to understand this. I'm on the judicial board of the state of Florida. I said, I'm recognized by the sport, Mr. LaRusso, but in this jurisdiction of Comiskey Park, it has no weight so whatsoever with this said judge. And I really wanted to get under his skin. I said, do you understand what I'm saying? He shook his head, yes. I said, you've been in court before. I've made an automatic response. If I don't get one, then that fine's going double.
Wow.
So,
wow.
I said, do you want me to hear this case because you can pay that $1,000? Right now, nobody's ever won, and if you lose, it's going to be $2,000. He goes, yeah, I want you to be a serious judge, and I want you to do this. I said, do not tell this court how they're supposed to rule on a case. So now he's very upset.
I would think.
He lost, and he goes, he dropped something on me that I didn't like him saying, so the fine was $2,500.
Oh, wow.
I said, Mr. Johnson, go to Mr. LaRusso's office and get a check for $2,500. He paid it from that moment on, from August to the end of the year. That's a fine from LaRusso. That's a fine. He was getting his money back. Yeah. But,
that's so much fun.
Yeah, it was great. And everybody loved it because we could actually get out the manager with some latitude.
Of course.
And when we took the field, we were all together on the field. We weren't very good, but we were all together. Because if you look at it, those guys got better and better. That's when they won. And won the World Series after that.
Are you writing a book soon? Because you have so many stories. Why?
No. You won't do it?
No, I've got some papers that I did where I studied some medicine. I'm allowed to go to the lab at Harvard and study stem cells. I'm a transplant patient, 27 years.
Wow.
Post-transplant, I had a kidney. My brother Tom gave me a kidney.
I know that story. That's amazing.
If I can help somebody like that, I'm more than happy to help them.
Oh. Yeah. How are you on time, Ed? Do you have a little bit of time? We have to take a break.
3:10.
So you're okay? You can stick another segment? The legendary Ed Farmer, incredible White Sox broadcaster, is our guest. We'll stick around. We'll take a quick break. It's Bill and Wendy. We're at Cork and Carry right by beautiful White Sox Park. It's the home opener for your first place Chicago White Sox. We're fortunate enough to talk to Ed Farmer, the legendary Ed Farmer. Ed,
Wendy, get some donuts in the car if you guys want.
Do you have more donuts in the car?
No, I've got...
We were told you'd bring donuts, but we're good.
I got a McPherson's Bakery out there on Pearl Ridge. It's outstanding.
I'm not so kidding. Good. Are they the best?
Oh, they're the
DJ
best.
DJ will eat them, right?
No.
Why? You don't share?
He told me today, he goes, I can't eat them. So I said, why's that? He goes, well, we got it at three. That has no jurisdiction on what you're going to eat there.
Would you mind talking a little bit about Disco Demolition? You were pitching that night.
Yeah, I pitched that night.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about
the second game was canceled.
I remember. Against the Tigers.
Yeah, against the Tigers.
Yeah.
And I pitched the last 3 innings of the game. Game one, because game two did not happen. And there were disco records being thrown out of the upper deck.
Like frisbees. Yeah. Like they could decapitate you.
There were no LPs out there, let me say that. And they made the deal. But, yeah, I was pitching. I stomped on a disco record, and 45 flew by me. And we were picking those up, and then Steve Bell had the bonfire in center field.
Yeah.
And,
which surprised even him.
People swarmed the field. And people were tearing up pieces of son of Roger Bosworth, the best groundskeeper in baseball.
Was crying.
He had to redo the infield. And we went on that field, and we played the Tigers in a doubleheader. And the sod was just, it wasn't even set yet because it hadn't knitted. And we played on that field. At one time, that field, Comiskey Park, was not a real good range thing. So Roger put in a system, and we never really had a problem with that.
Yeah. Was it the strangest thing you've ever seen in baseball?
Yeah, they told us it was not going, the second game wasn't going to happen, so we could get out of there. We had a 2x6 or 4x8 across the door to the clubhouse from the field.
Yeah.
And that was getting distressed from the way down because people wanted to come to the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God.
Wow.
And I'm sure they had a few libations.
Yeah,
I would imagine. Journey up the dugout steps. Yeah.
And they have tried to make some changes to baseball to make it a faster game.
Yeah.
If they said to you, Ed, you make a rule change. You can change anything you want about Major League Baseball. What would your rule change be?
Get the batter in a batter's box fast, have the pitcher throw 4 pitches when he's ready to go.
Yeah.
I threw 3. When I came into the game, I only threw 3 pitches. I was loose already. I'd say to the umpire, get him in the batter's box right now. So I was dictating policy to the hitter before he actually got in the batter's box.
Yeah.
And if anybody gave any lift, I mean, we just took care of that.
Right.
But what happened? Why did it all of a sudden slow down so much? People demanded more and better pitches? They're pickier? What?
No, I mean, the manager goes out there, the pitching coach goes out there, the catcher can make as many trips as he wants, so that's been curtailed somewhat. But I really didn't want to see the catcher out there. It made me nervous.
Right.
You know, this is what we're trying to do. Please, don't give me that, because I want to keep the ball down until strike one.
Yeah.
And long counts lead to teams that don't play usually a good defense because they get bored with ball one, ball two.
Right.
Now everything is sabermetrics, which I use some of that, but I want to see what the guy's got in his chest boot himself.
Sure.
If he's ready to play, we can do great things.
Do you think Tony La Russa, you mentioned Tony La Russa earlier.
He's the whole landscape of the bullpen.
He was the guy who kind of figured it all out,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Said, you're responsible for this because I threw 116 or 118 innings 1 year as a short man.
Yeah.
There wasn't anything short about that. So what he did was he got a guy, he believed in building your pitching staff back to front.
Yeah.
You need someone to close the game out or you're not going to win.
Yep. Yeah.
So I was that guy. Then he had somebody in front of me that they called a bridge to get to me.
Yeah.
And he played a shortened game. He pitched count, he had that. Starter was going to go 5 or 6. If he was cruising, he'd go out.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would change the dynamic of the long guy he was going to pitch because he went 7. So the guy from the 7th and 8th inning and then the 9th inning.
Yeah. He really was an innovator in that respect.
Yeah, no question. No gray area.
Yeah.
To this day, one of my dear friends, I called him the other day about a transplant patient in Boston trying to raise money for a kidney transplant.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to need some tickets for donation. It was no problem. Fenway sold out.
How about that?
Yeah.
When you made the transition from player to broadcaster, who were you emulating? Who were you looking at from the broadcast side and said, I would like to be more like that guy?
Well, I live fairly close to Vin Scully in California. He shops at the same bookstore.
Yeah.
And Ernie Harwell, when I was in the store, I thought he did a great job.
Two of the best.
No, well, Mr. Scully, when I see him in Albertson's out there, I bombard him with questions. No, I stole this from you. If you hear me, I'll say a very pleasant good evening, a very pleasant good afternoon.
Yeah.
That's how he starts his broadcast, or used to. And I'll say, I've Jim Nance, who I think is one of the best in football and also golf. He played in the golf team at Houston with one of my close friends, Freddie Couples. And I got to meet him about 7 or 8 years ago. And I wrote a book about his father. His father had Alzheimer's disease. On page 57 of his book, when I met him, I said, I use friends from you. That's what he meant. I said, when they put the camera on you after they showed the topography of St. Pebble Beach,
yeah,
or the stadium, the football game going to play that, they put the camera on him after they showed you.
Yeah.
And they'll say, hi, once again, friends, Jim Nance here.
Yeah.
And I read the book, and I said, I read that book on your dad. He goes, what do you mean? I said, I have a photographic memory to a point where I link things together.
Yeah.
If you guys come over today, I don't write a lot of stuff down. I just don't. I read before the game, and I'll know words to take me to the next thought.
Yeah.
And I said, page 57 of your dad's
book,
always by my side.
Wow.
Paragraph 3. His dad had Alzheimer's, and he would forget your name, but he'd say, hi, friend, how are you?
Yeah.
So what I said, with Jim Jackson, friends at Farmer, glad you're with us tonight. It's the first of three here in Toronto.
Personalizes it.
Yeah.
Vince Scully also had this theory of letting the moment speak for itself.
Nobody better.
Right? He was so good.
One of the best calls was silence for him.
Yeah.
And then one of his greatest calls was when Gibson hit the home run off Eckers Lake. And he said, he couldn't walk.
Right.
He comes up and he hits a home run on a 3-2 slider.
Yep.
And he goes, in the year where the impossible has happened, the improbable happens tonight here at Dodger Stadium in the World Series.
Wow.
I mean, he used Zephyr Wind one day, and I was listening to Freeway Series. I had to go home and look up what a Zephyr Wind was. It was less than 7 miles an hour. So only there, I'm saying, I got to get Zephyr Wind there. So I said, guarantee great field there in Chicago. The game will be playing temperatures exceeding 65, but never crossing the threshold of 70. And I look at the flag, and it's pointing straight down, and I said, not a Zephyr Wind.
Perfect.
Yeah, and I said to Scully, I said, those were some of the things I steal. He goes, steal as much as you want.
What's the fastest pitch you ever threw?
100 miles an hour.
And what is the fastest now that's out there?
We had 103 from a couple of guys in spring training.
Yeah, 103.
Yeah, 103.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell a very short story because I know we're pressed for time. But I was coming in here to do scout the White Sox. They had made changes, and I had to see him. I was assistant general manager in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
Try to come in and figure out. And I wonder what Wayne Hagen was doing the game with John Rooney.
Mm-hmm.
And John had CBS radio on Sunday, and Hagen was quizzing me about this or that. And he goes, if you could come up with me tomorrow, I don't have anybody in the booth with me who could help me. I said, well, I'm going home. I've been on the road. I'm in Baltimore here for 2 weeks. I'm going home to see my family tomorrow. The flight's at 11 o'clock. He goes, you can really help me. So I called my wife, and Barbara said, what's the other 3 hours? Just stay there and help the guy out.
Yeah.
So I did, and when I was done with that, he took me to O'Hare, and Hagen did it. He goes, that was excellent. I said, I don't know what I'm doing. He goes, that was excellent. And the next week, they were in Oakland, and he said, next week, we're in Oakland. If you want, I only had 400,000 air miles. That's what I had. Because I was staying at Marriott, I had the American Airlines credit card. I was quadrupling everything. And I flew up to Oakland and did it. And flew back home.
Yeah.
And
but I gotta say it, because I was hearing you when you would do those phone assignments, and I'd always say to myself, he sounds like he's been doing this forever.
When I went home, I didn't know how to do play-by-play.
Yeah.
And I was the analyst on Sundays. I came over. I'm still trying to figure this one out. They gave me a better job than I had in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And they made me the special assistant and senior vice president of baseball operations. I still don't know what that is.
Sounds good, though.
I looked for it, but I haven't had it since. And I had radio duties as an analyst on Sundays because John was going CBS radio.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. I basically butchered one inning. They had me do one inning. I didn't know how to get in and out of it. And I went home and I was taking my daughter, Shanda, who was a commercial artist and also a model, print model in Los Angeles. and I started doing the Twins and White Sox. You know, it's a parking lot on Wednesday night going into Hollywood.
Yeah.
At 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
Well, that's when she had to go.
4 o'clock. God.
I'll be there by 6. And then another night was Friday. So I'm in traffic, and I said, this is going to be a poetic measure of quick.
Yeah.
That I'm not getting. The trochaic thing was a little telling the story at the end of it. It's got to be iambic pentameter. So I started doing the Twins and White Sox. And after a month, my daughter goes, Dad, I don't want to hear the Twins and White Sox.
We cannot thank you enough for coming by. I know first pitch is 3-something.
3:10, are they saying?
3:10.
Yeah. Yeah. I will call you every day if I see you. I'll tell you when that first pitch.
You know what? Please
because
do.
It's confusing. I was confused the other night. We're coming out at 6:07. We came out of Chicago time. We came out at 5:59.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I'm shocked with Goose Island being a sponsor now of the White Sox that the start time isn't 3:12 and not 3:12 beer.
Yeah, exactly.
That would make all kinds of sense. It used to be a 7-Eleven start when 7-Eleven sponsored it.
Why is it 7-Eleven if they're open 24 hours?
I don't know.
That is the best part.
No one knows.
Come on. These things drive me nuts. If he had good success, I hope so. He's a young freshman. Yeah, I mean, please.
Let's go White Sox. The season opener today, the wonderful Ed Farmer.
It's Shields against George Zimmerman. It should be a good one, and hopefully we'll call a winner. Everybody here at Fork and Gary, hopefully we'll see you across the street at Guaranteed Rate Fields. Have a pleasure being with you, too.
Have a great call today.
Good to see you again. Also.
Look out for those Zephyr winds. They're supposed to be pretty tumultuous.
You know, I'm glad it's only a Zephyr day because it's cold outside.
The legendary Ed Farmer, everybody. Back after this, Bill and Wendy at Cork and Carry on WGN.